Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hi, I'm Katie Mosman Wadler, Executive Director of HRN. HRN is dedicated to amplifying small businesses that keep our communities vibrant. Today, I'm asking business owners to take part in our business membership drive by supporting HRN's mission with a $500 membership. HRN will shine a light on your work, and you'll help sustain our mission to expand the way eaters think about food. As a thank you for this tax-deductible donation, your business will receive on-air mentions, social media posts, listings on our website, and more. You'll also play an essential role in keeping nonprofit food radio on the air. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/biz to become a business member today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/biz. Thank you for your support.
I'm going to be kind of having a great discussion. We already started to have a great discussion in the back. with really, really super talented winemaker from different areas of Austria. So over there to my left, we have Andreas, Leo, Adriana, and Steven. So we are going to go through their wine and talk a bit about their work. So that's kind of what's the point today. So we are going to also talk about wine that the winemaker are not here. And we're kind of trying to discuss their wine and their perspective and with different type of angle. Very quick housekeeping. The wine and all the range that these guys are making, you can find them in a far, I think, east corner of the room over there. There was some sun this morning, as well as an open bar when you're going to find other cuvées from the winemaker that we are showing today. We are just showing one cuvée per person. Okay, so please, if you're interested by one of them, go over there and test the range. There is way more to taste. And it's really about today kind of bringing a lot of attention to the incredibly dynamic that's happening, I think, in Austria. How we are going to taste. We are going to do 4 flights of 3 wines, okay? So when we are done with the flight, please dump, and they will pour the next 3 wines. And you can follow. We are going to start on your sheet. We are going to follow the column, okay? So as you can see, the first 3 ones that you have, the one from Christoph, the one from Leo, and the one from Adriana. So just dump that. There is more wine to taste at the end if you want, okay? So we're going to try to answer to the very important question, what is happening in Austria? And I think, I'm not sure there is an hour will be enough because there is a lot of things happening in Austria. I think as a wine buyer in New York, it's probably one of the countries I've been the most excited about, you know, in Europe. For a couple of reasons. First is an incredible strong identity and dynamic. I think what's been happening in the different region and the ways that these guys and a lot of others have been embracing at the same time their history, their heritage, but also the potential of their region with a lot of new techniques and experimentation to a super, super, super high level of precision is commitment is rare. I think there is not a lot of country like that when you have at the same time an idea of creativity and trying and pushing and trying to understand their place and their history and their background, but at the same time delivering us wines that have a lot of precision. I think what you are finding on the market for no sulfur, low sulfur, skin contact, pet nat, all that, what you get in a bottle when you're opening one of the wine usually coming from Austria is of the uttermost quality. Like, it's not going to be fucked up wine. And I think that's very important. There is a respect also on that side for us as drinker. And I think this is only being possible because there is a real deep understanding of their place, their grapes, and the technique. And this is what we're going to talk about. So I think there's a lot of things happening in Austria. And what is also very important and interesting, and we're going to see that today, it's not happening in one region. It's happening all over the country. Okay, so we're going to talk really about really different perspective and landscape about that. It's not only one place that is pushing, it's everywhere, which is really quite extraordinary as a dynamic for our whole country. Okay, so let's start first. We're going to start. What's happening in Austria?
But yeah, you're okay. First, you're on my left.
Hey guys, nice to meet you. What's happening? There are coming quite a lot young winemakers who try to bring the terroir as naturally as possible in the bottle. Yeah, that's going on. Or Leo, what do you say?
So, I think it's all over. A lot of young winemakers try it. Come back from the technical way back to the natural way, and yes, some wineries are in the front, and we tried them several years ago to make the step back and also prestigious and to get real nice drinkable and drinky natural wine. So that's all.
Yes, yeah, so there is different waves, and you really think that right now, like, the new generation is like really benefiting from what was done since the 1980s, and you can push more. Okay. What's happening in Austria, especially with you as somebody that also come from outside?
So yeah, I am Spanish, so I think in Austria what it happened, it have a lot together with heritage. We are an old wine country. And young people, like they say, they are trying to believe in them, they are trying to try to experiment new things, but the stone of all of these things is this heritage and the beautiful landscape that we have, the culture that we do have, with be open to interpret it in maybe in another way, in a way that maybe was on the 80s, on the 90s, getting forget about all this industry, you know, people is coming back to the roots, and we are doing well all together, I think.
And just, you think, as somebody coming from Spain, you know, for example, in France, we have these very structural rules, and you are in the appellation, and you can't really experiment without being out loud right away. It's a bit like that in Spain. Do you think in Austria, you have this ability to have a bit of freedom while still respecting a certain, like, frame of work?
Freedom on which way do you mean, with
experimenting? Or? Oh, no, in terms of no wine. We're not going to talk about politics today,
okay,
guys.
Okay. yeah, we went now.
No politics.
Yeah. So,
in terms of like trying to do a different wine or like grapes or all that in your frame?
Yeah, I think Austria is very developed. We are thinking organic. In our area, in Burgenland, it's like 40% of the farmers are working organic. This is huge amount. I think we are faster in development. It's a green thinking country, no?
Yeah.
It's very good. We are happy to be like this, and it's going to get more. Young generations just think on this way, no?
Yes, they don't think the other way.
Yeah, it's just the way. It's like there is no other way, no? You cannot take your view out of the site because it is.
Wait.
Yeah,
great. And so, what's happening?
Hi. I think what's happening is just a reason. Something is happening. I think the Austrian wine market. I can say it personally, but I think you would agree as well. For a young generation like we are, it's pretty hard to get to sell the wines in Austria for the Austrian market. So we all have a very high export quote, and with a style of wines which is completely different from the usual Austrian style of wines, which definitely is other thing. And it's quite a hard work to get into the business, and that's why we changed things, and that's why the natural wine movement were that fast, and is developing pretty well. I think that changed a lot, and the whole thinking about wine for this young generation of wine growers is completely different. I mean, I can say it for Burgenland, but also for other parts of Austria, where we have this very high export quote. Most of our wines, or the wines we will taste today, are not sold in Austria. It's incredible, but that's we really have to tell you.
Which is quite surprising, but also allows to have like multiple international perspective, and I'm guessing keeping being open and discovering what's happening everywhere and get a lot of outside exchange. Well, because what we're going to taste today is made with your grape, your soil, and your reinterpretation of all that with this international influence in terms of just exchange with what's going on. So I think that makes a kind of quite an incredible combination, and hopefully you're going to taste it with us in an hour or so. So let's start tasting, guys. And I wanted to start with a producer that is not here today, but is someone that totally changed my mind on how to think about Groene Veltliner and what is what about his literary of in Kremstall. So you know, when you are learning about wine, it's kind of this very classic profile of the grape, and he's one of the ones that just exploded my mind about what can you do with this grape and blending it and all that. So let's start. The first one is going to be the sparkling wine. We can have a little bit more. It's called Kalkspitz. I think it's a little bit like all of you guys, with Christoph taking over the family estate and being trained at a pretty high end in winemaking school, and really having also being absolutely converted to the idea of grape farming and biodynamic farming, and from that started to experiment when he knew a little bit about and understanding his terroir, to an extreme that I think today is mastered very well. Because when you see on paper about this wine, you will be like, I'm not totally sure about what I'm going to taste. Because it's a blend of different grape variety. There is a base of Groene Veltliner, but he's working also with Valgal, with Blau Portugieser. There is a bit of Muscat Tonnel also here. And there is a part that's been aged in skin, some has been aged in barrel. There is two different type of cellar. He's doing all the malolactic here on this wine, and he's doing a pet nat. And when you see all that put together, you are like, not sure. And when you taste the wine, and it's definitely a wine I've been following for a couple of years, I think this is one of the most mastered sparkling wine made in pet nat style that I've been lucky to encounter. And I think this is because there is an extraordinary farming with somebody that really understands very well the grape and is able to push the limit to extract what he can, how he can, with patience and time. So I would like to know what you think, guys, about this wine. And how you guys also, for a first introduction, as a kind of a welcome to the new exploration path of Austria, but deeply grounded. What do you think about that? You already drank it, so.
I think it's quite a, on one side, it's quite a fresh, complex, easygoing style of pet nut, or I don't know, it's Angostural, I think. And I really like his way to, it's also my thinking, I think you don't have to just put one vintage in one bottle. I think it's nice to do complex wines with different vintages and bring some freestyle to it. Yeah. And I think Christoph is doing it really, really well.
Yeah, because he has a very specific part of it's very specific of limestone soil, and is on the right bank of the Danube, so it's not necessarily where you have most of the vineyard from the area, and you have this very specific active limestone soil quite high in elevation. And one of the ideas to transcend the vintage, to transcend the grape, to showcase that site in a wine. And he has been working a lot, as you say, with multi vintages to kind of erase the vintage effect to really show the place. And I don't know a lot of people that have been pushing so much with so many different wine techniques and having such a precision in a glass, especially of the quality of the bubble, the length, the layer of aromatics, a tiny bit of the leasiness, of course, coming from the fermentation. But then you can kind of pick up a lot of different little hints of detail while you're at 10.5% alcohol and you are below 18 ppm. So we are really talking about a time of patience and a mastery about the quality of what it can do. So I think it's somebody that, for me, in this part of Austria, has been really shaking up the thing quite a lot, and at least on our side in the US market. And so I encourage you to continue to discover his work, because I think it's really, really high quality. Yeah?
Definitely. I would agree with that as well. I also think that if you want to talk about the variety of Grüne Veltliner, there's still the variety going on, and you definitely can say you find the character of Grüne Veltliner in there, the peppery notes and so on, these cool notes, green peppers and so on. That's a really good made Petnat,
yep.
I guess.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's continue with you.
Yeah.
Okay. So where are you from?
So I'm from Lower Austria. So I'm in the northern part of Austria. So it's, I think, we are one of the coolest growing regions in Austria. So, but we have also the big climate change the last 15 years, and we get them. So we never pick the variety of Grüne Veltliner earlier as the last 15 years before. So normally we start picking with Grüne Veltliner former times. I think my father did it around beginning of October and ended in the mid of November. And now we are also over 3 weeks faster than normal. So we are real close to the Czech border. So it's just 25 kilometers in the north, and we are on the Czech border, and we. At my winery is also situated, so it's just 50 minutes up to the city center of Vienna. So you see it on the map. So the Weinviertel district, the growing district in the north, is on the map one of the biggest, but everything is quite close together. Also Kremstal to Christoph, I take only 30 minutes ride to his winery, to his place, and it's on the different side of the Danube. From my hillside, I can see the slopes of his vineyards, and that's the crazy thing about the district when we talk about the areas in Austria. So, because the northern part is quite close together, and the wine styles are so dominated on the microclimate and also on the special soil of each hillside. So, it's the history about the soil is coming. So. It's a part like Christoph. We have also gravel, limestone on it from the old seaside. But he has a different microclimate because the air direction is just 30 kilometers away from my hillside. And you get also real different styles. So that's the real nice part when you try all the wines of the region.
So what makes your area very special for you? What if we have to think about your area in the north by the Czech Republic, if you can, in a couple of words, say soil, climate, what do we need to think about to understand your wine? In terms of climate, soil, and then let's get into your wine.
The special thing is we are also always some days later than the other regions of the ripening, and so we get a much higher day and night temperature during the ripening process. So for me, it starts in August, and between the day and night, and that's the real crazy thing in Austria. So my friends, also in Burgenland, they have to start picking mid or end of August, and we don't think about the picking of the grapes. And so, and everything is quite close, and the microclimate is so dominant, so about of 120 kilometers, you have in our district four climate zones of picking, how to find the right picking of the grapes for to find it for your personal wine style, how to do it. So we also pick, we start picking beginning of September and end normally end of October. So it's a huge
window
how to find the right picking for the wine style, what you prefer by yourself.
So you have been working biodynamic since some times. What's in two words, like what the farming that you are doing, how do you try to capture that liveliness and that life of the vineyard into your bottle and especially in this cuvée? What's the process for you?
The process is also to keep the soil real livable, and that's the way the wines get all the minerals in it. And this vineyard of the Hunsbeck vineyard is planted by my grandfather, so in the year 1985, so it's quite old vineyard, and we use also the COVID time to renew the this old vineyard to keep the old root system, because this old genetic of the Grüner Veltliner keeps them also special to the younger selections of Veltliner, and that's so amazing. So we also focused that we get the further selection for replantings from these old vineyards, or focus to find old vineyards with all the genes to replant them when the soil, to fit to the soil. So that's the goal, what I'm looking for.
And here, what do you try to extract? How do you make the wine to kind of express at its best? What is your winemaking technique and tools to showcase that genetic diversity, this old vine, this soil? How do you, what's the point of your winemaking for this wine to capture that?
This is
that?
The old school winemaking, so my grandfather did it. So it was my first project when I do my first wine, and I have an office job before, and then I say I never will be a winemaker. And years later I say, okay, you can do cool stuff, but how you can do that? So in the school you learn all the modern stuff, to add a lot of stuff to get the classical Austrian modern wine style. And I have to rethinking about and to keep it pure. And so this wine, the Hunsbeck vineyard, it's not typical for natural winemaking. It's the real late picking. It's the last vineyard I pick at home. But we keep a normal, at this time we have real cool nights. And so we can keep the berries over 3 days without any fermentation process, because it's too cold during night, and keep them on the skins. And after that, we make only a soft pressing and keep bring them directly like the old way in the oak barrels and let them start. So the focus for that wine for me is to keep it like the old regional tradition. But it's a high-end selection of the berries, so that we can really work without any sulfates and all this adding and microbiological controlling stuff. What you learn in school to have to be say on the safe side, but I think you have always to be, you have to walk on the red line to get the real expression out of the vineyards. And,
yeah, because here in terms of sulfur, we are very, very low.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. I think it's a very powerful and at the same time lifted expression, which I think is interesting for Austria. For me, it's always having this combination of ripeness and glycerol and textural aspects, but always a backbone of acidity. And there is not a lot of area where like that you can do that with dry wine, that you have the weight, not necessarily a weight in alcohol. We are not talking about 15% or 14.5%. And how much are you in that? Like 13.5. So we are not talking about overly high, a bit of glycerol, and you preserve that acid structure that at the end is also what's going to define the skeleton of the wine. And then you have all this dry extract at the end. And there is this really potential in Austria for climate and because of the right grape variety to be able to do that. So I think that's a really, very good example. Thanks.
Thanks.
Well, we have a lot of wine to taste, so let's go down. How far are you guys if you have to drive from one to another? An hour and a half. Okay, we are going to very far. Don't forget to go to Long Island Vineyard, it's 2 hours. So let's put things in perspective. So an hour and a half, and we're going to totally change landscape and area and feeling. So what about your area, your place, yourself,
yeah,
and this wine?
So I will tell you a little bit about us. We are two. So I am Adriana, and at home with the children is Martin. We are a winery. Both of us, we are making the wine together. We are a very little winery with 10 hectares. So everything was started like 10, 12 years ago. We were working as winemakers for very important biodynamic wineries in our area. And because of our life is wine, no? And we love it so much. So we were starting with one barrel in 2009. And the winery was growing. It was very intense time. At the moment, we don't know anymore how we managed to make 3 harvests per year. But on that time, we were making it, no? And since 3 years ago, we are at home just focusing in our project. Yeah, what we make for us, like I say before, the heritage is everything. The heritage and also the soils that we do have, the area where we grow. We are in Burgenland region. This is North Burgenland, exactly. It's like 50 kilometers southwest of Vienna. It is an area that is surrounded by a gorgeous and very, very big steppe lake that have around 50 kilometers. And in the top of the vineyards, we do have forest. So the forest, the sea, makes the area and this word that everybody hears so often, no, this terroir, is part of us. And what we do work... this incredible area, because we do have these two extreme soils, the calc in one side and the schist in the other side, and give us a lot of possibilities to work with. So today you are having here, this is our wine. We are having, it's called Edelbrunn. I am speaking German, sorry. It's a Gruner Veltliner. This is the problem with the Spanish. I don't know anymore in which language should I speak. The Spanish, the German, the English now. Here is the variety is Gruner Veltliner, no? Gruner Veltliner have an incredible old tradition in Burgenland. I don't know if you know about, but Burgenland was still 100 years ago part of Hungary. So we are also very influenced from the culture from Hungarian people and from the monarchy time. So for this, I would love that each of you were coming to visit the winery, because just in this way you could get an idea of who we are, no, and what the area is. But it's really amazing place. So this parcel that we do have here, it's called Edelbrunn. It's coming from the single vineyard Edelgraben. It's a small vineyard, just with 6 rows. It is like this because it was in the monarchy times. All the vineyards were split through the children's. So each children was getting part of the vineyard. And for this, our areas, our vineyards are always so small. And of the 6 rows, it's like 70 years old vineyard, so it's quite old. And we have 3 rows of Lafranchis that I have later, if somebody wants to taste.
It's very good.
And three rows of Gruner Veltliner. And the vineyard is quite special because it's surrounded by the forest. So it's really, really cold. We always harvest this Gruner Veltliner and also the Lafranchis like 3 weeks later. And we just have 12% volume. So these old clones of Gruner Veltliner were always less alcoholic at what the modern clones are nowadays. And also this coldness, no, because it's a cold area, because of it, the alcohol is not so high, but alcohol is not everything. I think everybody in this room knows about. So the texture and the structure that you can feel, I hope that you can get it, no? And it's this special this schist is a very calcareous, very porous, porous, how we say?
Porous, yeah.
Porous, yeah. Schist, so the roots can go very well because it's very breakable.
It's a decomposed, it's very altered kind of schist.
And it has a lot of minerals, so a lot of iron. It's a red schist, with a lot of mica too. Mica. And amazing place, and I would like to that you see it.
But I think what is very interesting is you are mentioning things like the quality of clonal, like clonal massa selection, having the old vine, especially with new clones of Gruner that can go higher in alcohol, and of course, question of the alcohol is a big one. So how do you preserve freshness? And the vegetal material is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
The altitude, the north facing seems to be a big one too. The canopy management of the farming, I'm guessing too, helping to manage to buffer that. And in your winemaking style, which I think here you can pick up a bit of reduction on the nose for this wine, which I think is a very nice reduction. Your style of winemaking is also done in a way that is allowing you to preserve compounds and structure with long aging and a minimal amount of sulfur.
Yes.
So I think we can feel that in this wine also.
Yeah, this way that we do work is a very old way. So we do not use modern techniques. We are, like I said before, we are very focused on terroir and on character. We want to make big wines. All our wines follow also the same line. So we don't have a fresh and fruity. So all are following this way. We make always short macerations with the stems. The stems are the root of our winemaking thinking. We think wine as food accompaniment. And we think these stems help us to bring a little bit, it helps you to connect with the floor, no?
To the soil. It's kind of the connection. It's like a channel. It's the spine. Is a stem.
And what we do is work with the full list. So we don't move the wines. We make short macerations with the stems, and then the wine, the juice, goes just direct to the barrel, and they stay on the full list, very reductive at the moment. If you come to the winery, you could look it, but the wines are very reductive in this moment. But this reduction is, in our point of view, very important to allow the wine to grow without sulfur. So this full time on the list give us also a sappiness in the mouth. I don't think that our wines are quite shine in the nose, but they are completely full and they make you
salivate
in the mouth. And this is also helping because of a long time on the list.
Yeah.
And that's it. No, before with the whites, before bottling, we rack them. And then we always add a little bit of sulfur before bottling because we want to keep away some problems like mouthness. And because of this, with sulfur, we could also, we want to have them precise. Because of this, we add always a little bit of sulfur, but really minimum amount.
But nothing during the aging of the wine and the winemaking process?
No.
Like the wine is done by itself?
Sometimes, depending on the year, because we work very clean, so we are freakies. We take away its botrytis. And if the vintage is very complicated, we can't add some sulfites on the grapes. This year, for example, we didn't add sulfites on the grapes. So there is no rules, no? Each vintage, we think on it and we change. But it's not like receipts.
Yeah.
It's a lot of Bauch.
Gut feel.
Gut feel, yeah.
Yeah, I think this wine is a great masterclass also in terms of something that has been more and more and more talk in terms of what makes a good wine and salivating and all that, which is the umami aspect, which is something we haven't really talked a lot in wine. We're already talking about salinity and salt, but you know, there is almost no salt in wine. Something like sodium doesn't exist in wine. In fact, we're confusing it with umami, which can take on certain side when you think about miso sauce and all this kind of thing, a salty aspect that's going to remind you of that. But lees and the amino acid in the lees are going to really feed the wine with this kind of umami feeling. And this is what we're thinking at the back. This aspect of the wine, when you spit it, is still staying. There is still kind of a coating aspect. There is a savory aspect that is not harsh. And the lees are bringing that, and it's something that more and more people are really talking about in terms of expression of the place and quality of winemaking. And I think your wine is really like showing that very well. And I think yours too, it was a bit more hidden by the oak, but it was also showing it in the back. And I really encourage you to start to think about the feeling in the back of your of when you spit. Not try some salt, try some soy sauce side by side. See where the thing about your palate, the salt is going to be at the very beginning. The soy sauce is going to be at the very end when you spit. And that is something that I think great wine are able to give amino acid in their must and are able to give that back. And that's one of the expression of terroir. And I think we can taste that with you with the quality of the lees work. So that's very cool. Okay, let's move on because we're almost done. We have 9 wines to taste and we have a lot to talk to you about. So we need the 3 glasses and maybe we can start already to talk about what you are doing because I'm very, very excited about your wine also.
Maybe first, that's the question I always get. What does Kolfok means? Like it's from a local dialect, as Adriana said before. We're not really Austrians. We're Hungarians living in Austria now. German-speaking Hungarians. In my case, my last name is Valanchit, so there's Croatian as well. That's the thing. We're still struggling with our identity, personally, but also with the winemaking we're doing, with the work we're doing. So that can be kind of a problem, but it can be also useful. I'm located just half an hour away from Adriana, so in the middle part of Burgenland, which is now well known for its red wines. That wasn't before, like 30 years ago, 40 years ago, especially the town of Neckenmark was 50-50 balanced between red and white wine. And when I started doing wines almost 10 years ago, I was just thinking about this fact that we had 50-50, so I went down to the cellar of my grandfather and saw all those white wines from Neckenmark, and that's where I tried to find white wines from Neckenmark nowadays. And everybody just told me, "Well, we're a red wine region; we can't make white wine." And that's why I said, "Okay, challenge accepted." The thing was, I definitely didn't want to do the classic style we drink in Austria, like Grüner Veltliner or Welschriesling. I wanted to show the special conditions of Neckenmark, the special terroir. We're located in a flat land. Burgenland is quite flat. The region Andreas comes from, how many centimeters are you above?
115, I always say Africa of Austria.
So he's pretty flat and we're up to 500 meters above sea level. So that's a big change. The thing is, we benefit from the western part of our region, which is open to the alpine climate. So we get a lot of cold winds through the vineyards. And we also have this alpine soil, which is, as Adriana just said, limestone, schist, also granite, and in the lower parts, also loam clay, up to volcanic soil. It's actually the youngest vulcan, which was just 30,000 years still active, is in this area as well. The thing was, when I started it, it was almost the same like Martin and Adriana did, I just had one barrel of Grüner Veltliner, one barrel of Pinot Blanc, one barrel of Welschriesling, and I did it on my own. Just the way I was thinking about wine, pretty easy. So that's how it developed. I didn't tell you what Kolfog actually means. A Kolfog means someone who is not accepting the conditions how they are. So something like getting out of the row in the local dialect. My grandfather used to call me like that when I'm not in church on Sunday. We're a pretty high Catholic community there, so yeah. And I'm also thinking about wines. Don't do it too dogmatic. Just keep it easy and just work with the things you have. For the wine we have now in the glass, it's a blend of Grüner Veltliner, Welschriesling, and Chardonnay. Sulfur is a big thing. Everybody's talking about sulfur. Is it good or not good? Should we use it or not? And that was my idea how to prevent adding sulfur to the wine. So I used this method. I just figured it out by myself. I use whole berries, so I destem it. And then I do a maceration up to 2 months. And during this maceration, fermentation is taking place inside the berry until they literally explode. And after this explosion, the wine is pressed, the berries are pressed. And then the final fermentation is still going on in large barrels. So those barrels are 1,200 liter Austrian oak from local coopers. Also special about those oaks, those barrels is they have a quite thick wood, so oxygenation isn't that fast. And because of the process of fermentation still going on, we always are on a reductive side. So I don't have to add any sulfur, but the wine will keep pretty straight and sharp. And that's what I want to see in my wines, liveness. Is this a word, liveness?
Yes,
okay. And I think this also have just 12%, maybe let's talk about climate change and so on. I don't agree with the early picking. So this is normally picked in the mid of September, although we're a warm region. I'm just changing vineyard systems now, double wine planting, where I have two wines on one spot, or even another row to the raw, which is there, so I can get more shape. I do less leaf work, so I don't put leaves out. And I think what is also important, and which will become a problem for single vineyards, is I think we have to combine sides. A pure south side is quite too hot in those days. So, for example, on this wine, I use north side, west side, east side, a little bit of south side.
So you think that climate change, especially when you have single vineyard, can start to become complicated to do certain single vineyard unless you have really the right varieties and one of the solutions that you guys have and is blending. Yeah. Is blending with a different plot that is one of the
That's just my opinion, but I think in my case I have a single vineyard which is a south side. And then I have a village wine from Blaufränkisch. And the village wine is much more elegant than the pure South side in some years, because I can combinate with a North side and so on. So,
So just guys, to be clear here, the winemaking technique used on top of like the farming is a carbonic maceration that we don't really see for whites. I know a couple of people doing that in the Roussillon, a couple of people doing that in California, but it's not a technique that's been very known for white wine. You know it, of course, for red wine. And a true carbonic maceration also when you like pull out the juice and everything is really going intracellular. So it's something I want to dig more into, because I think that there is a pertinence for that for whites. And something I just wanted to talk to you about, because it's not the first vintage of this wine you have been doing. So when you think about carbonic, often people are saying you don't really have any terroir expression, the aromatics are too strong, you are picking up all this like enzymatic aromatics, okay, the amylic and all that. But I deeply believe you can extract things in a different way, and then you still have the fermentation that's going to allow the transformation. So for you, like with your experience with this cuvée, how does it age? How does it express itself? This is super young. It's 21. It's a bit on that reduction again. That doesn't matter. You decant, you blow off. It's going to definitely disappear. You don't pick it in the mouth. No problem. How does it age? How does it express itself? Pass is very like kind of useful expression.
It's definitely a pretty young wine. I just made this experiment 3 years ago with the first vintage 2019. So if you open a 19 now, it's still on this very sharp reductive side. But that's how our soil is. I mean, this is the whole mix of very low nutrition soil, and that's how I really can show the variety the vineyard character in it. And I use this method, the intracellular fermentation. I wouldn't say probably it's the same thing, but I don't add any CO2 or anything like that. It's more like the natural way of maturation carbonique. I did that because I was always thinking about skin contact, skin fermentation. Most cases, it's too much for me, especially when you have oxygenation as well. So those wines tend to be on a very bright side. That's why I was also experimenting about this technique.
I think this is also something I think is quite interesting for me in a lot of you guys. It's you have a technical background that allows you to understand some of the natural techniques or different type of working with the grapes, both in a vineyard and in a winery, where you can use a natural dynamic or the dynamic of nature to end up with a wine that has nothing but that touch of sulfites added at the end. And I think that the technical knowledge is something that is also key regarding that, and to appreciate a different evaluation of how to make the wine in a cellar. So, okay, so we are going to move a little faster right now. The two next wine, the winemaker are not here. So here, a little bit of we go back to not very far maybe from you. It's you are the local guy, okay? So cuvée parcellaire with my very great French, parcellaire blanc, number one. I don't know how to say that with the Austrian accent, so I'm sorry for that. And here we are going to go with a blend of Welsh Riesling and Chardonnay. And the Welsh Riesling have been aged in amphora. So we are back north to a part of Vernviertel I didn't know very well. So maybe you can go quickly about just the area for an overall aspect, and then we are going to go into the wine quickly.
So the area of Johannes Winery is a bit more flat, but also the vineyards are surrounded of woods, so it's also a lot of chalky soil in that. In Johannes' area, so he's just over one hour far away from me, but he's always get a ripeness a bit normal over 2 up to 3 weeks before our region. Yeah. So we are still in the same wine growing district by law, but it's so different, and so it makes also the styles so different.
So different, yeah. And one of these cuvées and the parcellaire is trying to do is what you were mentioning about this idea of climate change and rethinking about that, and is really looking to get some sites that are more north or northeast facing to really go and preserve the freshness. That's on purpose. The whole line is about that, looking for exposures that are going to allow to preserve natural freshness in an area. If you're not careful and you're not doing the right farming, you can make wines that are
too opulent and too rich.
And
not so fresh and straight ahead. So.
Yeah, which I think here is quite striking to have that tension definition. Malo is done on this wine and the acid is absolutely outstanding. And the savouriness at the end. He's doing something in amphora. What do you think, guys? Have you been trying like amphora, of course, as being a very very proponent new way of vinifying and aging, and we know the virtue of amphora in certain countries and with grape variety. What do you think? Have you been working, guys, with amphora? Is it something that you are looking for to, and which type? Like in 30 seconds?
No. I think it's always important that you don't feel on a wine where it was matured. You don't feel the vessel where it was matured. So I think a wine should always be from the vineyard. You know, it should be influenced as possible. And I think amphora is nice, and you know, it's modern and everything. But I think it's can be also, in a way, it can be also influenced, like wood. I think the mixture and also the working with it, to you have to work, you have an idea of a wine, and that's the important thing.
Because amphora is so much more complex between the shape, the type of earth, the type of clay you're going to use, or it's a different type of terracotta. If it's going to be a terracotta, it's going to be a gray style. Is it going to be porous, unporous? Is it going to be underground, above ground? We just can't say amphora. We have to really think about, I'm guessing with your reductive style of winemaking, having something done in sandstone and ceramic and all that could work, having something open and porous and terracotta would be a whole different story.
It's becoming pretty important to just use what you actually have local. And I think we all have our forests at home. We all have our oak trees at home. So that makes it complicated to think about amphora, which, I don't know, is coming from somewhere in many cases.
For us, it's not having any, the amphora is not in our culture. So we really think that it's very, very important to hear where our ancestors were doing before us, and the amphoras are not having tradition in Austria. It's nice, it's trendy, it's good to experiment, but for me, personally, it's not an
option.
No,
it doesn't make sense for your understanding of your place.
No.
Yeah. So
you have amphora.
I have amphoras too. it's a nice part to work also with a natural material. Also, in former times, our district is real famous for clay and brick production. So it's a kind of tradition of the material, but not for ripening and fermentation. But for me, it's quite nice. You get a different style against oak and stainless steel tanks. So it's another way what you can do with the material. I will also experiment with primary rock tanks.
primary rock, so you have a tank in schist.
Yes. No, it's granite, so. And it's also, so you get with the same grapes of the same vineyards a different style, because the surface is different, and it brings a different expression of the natural material. So yeah. I prefer all this material more than stainless steel, because it's for itself. But then the special thing is to bring them real interesting together. So oak, amphora, clay, or granite, or stainless steel. So it, it's so interesting because each tank makes his own wine. So that's the big thing.
Yeah, at the end of that, every vessel has its own cinetic with your work, and is how to find the right cinetic for the right site. Yeah. So I really think, like the one of Johannes, like for this two grape variety in terms of tension and precision, I think is quite, once again, we go back to this idea of a wine that is full and dense, but still extraordinarily alive and fresh. And I think that's the kind of the take out of that. We are going to move on to the last one, and then we are going to dump, unfortunately, so we can test all the wine again in the back at the corner. Here, I picked this wine because I wanted to have a Riesling in skin contact, and also talk a little bit about this question of reduction. But Riesling in skin contact, and what the use of the skin, and how you guys have been thinking, working, bringing the skin on your whites. Is it something that you explored, matters, it's a way to preserve freshness, it's a way to bring structure, it's a way to, once again, balancing the alcohol, express the terroir. I believe you can fill the place with skin contact, no problem. So here we are in Kemptthal, we are really in an area that also is moving quite a lot, we're in the north of Langeloos, a little bit to the really north, quite high elevation, and it's 6 weeks skin contact for Riesling. So pick up the reduction on your nose, and we can probably start to pour the next flight, guys, for the Miri and the plotter. And so yeah, guys, what your take on skin and how skin can or cannot bring something to the white as a way to express terroir and also balance out other compound like alcohol, especially.
So I think it's also for me the big thing of the climate change, and so we get also the fruit is still in the skins, and so that's the nice way we can work to bring more complexity also from the soil into the wine without any other influences of the wine making technique. So for myself, I use different contact times. Depends always on the vintage, because in a 10 years mix, we have maximum two times similar, the same ripeness at the same time. So it's always changing, and never one year is like the same like the next year. And I think for a typical winemaking of each vintage, you have to get the right feeling, like Adriana said, you have to focus how was the ripening of each special vineyard. And so the skin contact brings you the tannin structure and also the fruitiness, the fine fruitiness and minerals back to the wine. So I think that's a special part of skin.
Of skin maceration.
Yes.
So just here, in terms of altitude, we are quite high. Just to think on tech, it's less than 20 parts per million for sulfur. We have 400 meters elevation, and salt type is less. We haven't really talked about this part of that, and they're also Demeter certified. I think with skin, for me, we are still at the very beginning of how to understand it. As professional, as winemaker, if I may, as how do they age, how do they behave, how do we test them? And it's a fascinating path we are taking right now, with so many variation on term between the grape variety itself and how it's been vinified, and of course the soil type. And it's a whole new alphabet. It's a whole new language. We are just at the very beginning of starting to be able to express and understand how they work. And there is a lot of trials, there is a lot of things that are imperfect, but it's a very challenging thing, and we need to build up a new vocabulary for us to understand and talk about that. And well, we kind of be more secure when we talk about red wine, but I'm not sure we can really use the same feel for white, for the skin.
I think in this case, the skin contact is quite interesting because you are playing with a variety who have a very high acidity. So I am sure he was also going through the malolactic. Yeah. You can taste it, but it is a way to play. No, for me, in this means of English. I don't know. So for me, skin contact or long macerations for herself is like appropriate for aromatic varieties. Aromatic varieties were make it for 100 years also in this way, you know. And for me, is the big player for make skin contact. But I like it this with Riesling. For us, for example, Muscat. Muscat Ottonelle is a variety who works very well, no? And in Muscat, in Austria, have the skin contact have also the good thing that keeps you down the acidity, so you have always less acidity, but you win always in freshness. So even if you fell down maybe 1.5 gram of acidity, you still feel the freshness. And with aromatic varieties is always very interesting because they used to be very perfumate and very too heavy and too much. It's like a perfume, a woman with a lot of makeup, a lot of perfume, it's too much. And the stems helps you to keep down a little bit, to keep down.
To be a bit more quiet.
Yeah, quiet. Yeah.
Yeah, and once again, I think also one of the things today about the one we are testing is this idea of oxido reduction and how reduction is to be welcome in its all diversity. I think we are talking about reduction in a very narrow, simplistic way, and there is a very big way of expressing it. And today, I think we can test that in wine is something that as taster, we need to kind of get into a little bit more, especially because usually when we're thinking about no sulfur wine, you always think about oxidation and wines that tends to be brews and aromatics that are a bit falling apart, and as well as the structure falling apart. And it's not really the case anymore because between the grape varieties, the type of soil, the vinification techniques, there is way more things happening with this kind of reductive environment, and we need to understand how they behave, what does that mean, and how they're going to express themselves more than ever. And this oxidoreduction cinetic and dynamic is something that we don't really talk in wines, and I really think every wine is going to behave differently depending on its density, its old vine, its terroir, and its extraction. And this is something we need to pay way more attention, especially as professionals selling this wine, either on a wine shop or on the floor, because it's a new, each wine going to have its own duration. It's going to have its own way of developing itself way more than before. So we're going to go down south quickly. You're also going to be in charge because it was. I'm so sorry. It was not to be the wine we are supposed to have. So I'm not knowing about all the technical aspect of the wine from Miri. But we're going to go to Styria for the two next wine. I wanted something called Schist Happens because I think that's the best name ever. I should have called my restaurant like that. He took it before me. I've never been to Styria. And I have to say, it's like when you look at pictures and all that, it looks like a little paradise. And it looks also like your region looks like paradise, but I've been. So I kind of have an idea. But it looks like an area that has also is quite strong personality, like yours, and own identity. And Sauvignon Blanc, I think I was telling the other day with people from the Loire Valley in Sancerre, I said, guys, if there is one area in the world you need to be very worried about, forget about Bordeaux, forget about California. Just watch your back with Styria, because I really think there is a really very strong, legit identity of Sauvignon Blanc there that has been there for 150 years, if I'm not mistaken, with a strong personality, ripeness, freshness at the same time, no worried about expression and getting a bit of that more opulent brightness, no like reductive winemaking. And I really think that in Styria there is something very, very strong about this grape and totally legit. So...
with Michis wine, so it's in from Kizek, so it's really strong slopes, so, and it's also quite high, his vineyards, and from the climate, so it's also more on the Mediterranean side.
So how far are we from the Mediterranean when you're in Styria?
I think it's the next hillside, and then it goes down to...
So an hour.
I think so. It's just 200 kilometers to Adria, to the Adriatic seaside in direction. So, but from this place, you don't see the seaside.
I have the tech sheet on my phone, guys. So I'm going to read you the tech sheet and pretend I know everything about the wine. No, but it's part also of this, once again, you all guys kind of belong to the same dynamic. Family has been there for quite some time in the area, and you are taking over. Your parents' generation are also allowing you to go in a certain direction. You are transitioning from a certain market and economical structure for the winery to do something else and going to export, and all that is a little bit what also he did, like in his own way. So we are all kind of following the same dynamic right now, like heritage on the side and then opening with parents and everything supporting you, but parents also that already kind of understood the importance of farming and the importance of being...
Michi Lawrence, I think not as well as you do, but I think it's pretty brave what he's doing, because he's in a region which is quite famous for tourism, and there's something like also wine tourism is going on there, and in many cases you will not find many difference between your winery and the neighbor winery. They're quite the same style. I have to tell you that for Welsh Riesling, for example. But he's doing a quite interesting thing there, completely different to most of his neighbors, and bringing a completely new dimension in Sauvignon Blanc. I mean, Sauvignon Blanc is becoming the variety in Styria, or is the variety in Styria, and I think you really have to search for those two wines we will have now to find somewhere else.
Yeah, because you had a pioneer group of people that put Styria with this reflection of farming, and really, honestly, the Mercer and the Chepi and all that of the world really helped in America to put a light on this region and to think differently about this region. And now more people are really but following their own identity, because doors have been opened. So I'm sorry, I didn't receive that. So I'm not going to pretend I know anything about the winemaking. I encourage you just to deep dive. Of schist happens. There is schist soil there. It's high elevation. This kind of diurnal shift again, that is very, very interesting. The one I wanted to have was a Solera Sauvignon Blanc style with skin contact. So this idea, once again, of using time, using the skin, and thinking differently about how to express the soil without thinking about it has to be a vintage and it has to be a single vineyard. It can be something a bit broader than that. So I encourage you. I think the wine is over there, too, at the tasting, so you can taste it over there. We're going to go to the next one. And for the next one... it's going to be very simple. I would like you to tell me what is a grape variety. You can't play. Like these guys, they can't play because we talk about it. What is a grape variety? Okay. I'm going to help you. Alors, who thinks it's Riesling? Sauvignon Blanc. One Sauvignon Blanc. Welsh Riesling. Muscat. Oh, you have to play, guys. Weissburgunder. Grüner Veltliner.
You want to see some hands.
Yeah, there is no one. You're not playing. Allez, let's do it again. Riesling. Allez, allez. Sauvignon Blanc? Okay. What did I say? Weltschriesling? Got it. Muscat? Autonne Muscat. Weissburgunder? Chardonnay? Why not? Why not? Chardonnay with a little something. Pinot Gris? Ah. Okay, we all lost. Okay. This one is made at 90% with hybrids. Okay, so, and I wanted really to have an hybrid wine, a Peewee wine in the flights. Because I think it's a very important subject today. A lot of people are talking about it. Austria has been one of the countries with Northern Italy and Germany and Switzerland to really kind of really try and embrace this idea quite a long time ago. So we start to finally have some vineyards that start to be a little bit older, and we start to have a tiny bit of terroir expression because they're getting old vines. So here you get two grape varieties that are, in fact, genetically parents. You have Bronner. I'm not going to give you the heritage of Bronner, but it's a little bit of a Vitis amurensis, which is a Vitis that is from Asia in the blend. And the other one is Souvenir Gris. And Souvenir Gris is Bronner crossed with Cabernet Sauvignon. But this is hybrid at 90%, and you have a tiny bit of Weissburgunder in this wine. And the Plodder-Rosenberg family has been in biodynamics since some time, but they've been also working with hybrid since some times. And I thought it would be interesting to test, I think, a very well executed wine, like it's a very well-made, well-vinified and expressive wine where you don't really get a lot of the usual preconception and or hybrid prejudices that we have. I think this wine, I would have been totally fooled, and it would have been impossible for me to say that it was coming from hybrids. So be careful, like, let's be clear. It's hybrids that we call Peewees. They have been developed in the last 50 years. We are not talking about hybrids like we have in New York, for example, that are way older. They are from the early 19th century, from the 1810s, the Delaware, the Catawba, and all that. Very foxy, very powerfully aromatic, a lot of Labrusca. We're not talking about the hybrids developed during the Phylloxera crisis, the Maréchal Foch, the Seval, the Vidal, and all that. We are talking about hybrids that have been developed over the last 40, 50 years with a new technique that the idea is to manage to cross Vitis in order to take a gene characteristic to one of them while preserving the vinifera quality in terms of the taste, okay? So it's a very different way of thinking about how we work with Vitis vinifera and Vitis labrusca, Vitis riparia, Vitis amurensis, muscadinia, and all these guys, okay? So we are talking about Peewees. So I wanted to have one of these wines today because I really think it's part of the discussion. It's part of what we are going to face more and more. It's part of grape variety we need to pay attention to. Guys, what do you think about, like, do you have Peewees? Are you working with them? Is it something that is on your mindset for climate change on one side? Because some of them, they're really being worked to be drought resistant, but also disease resistant, which is a big one against mildew and oidium especially. That's kind of the big thing for them.
Family Plodder Rosenberg, they are good friends for me. They are completely happy and they believe on Peewees. They were one of the first wineries who we are working with, and they are completely, they want to change, no? They want to just be 100% working with Peewees because they are so happy. What you say is an easier way to manage with the diseases on the vineyards. So in this way, they can reduce sulfur and copper levels. And yeah, they think like this and they will go through. For me personal, I respect it a lot. I think it's good. They should do it, but it's not for me. Mm.
Same to me. There must be something which is not good because You just told us PB, it's
you don't like it.
No. It's pretty easy to handle because you will not get any mildew, and they don't need that much water and so on. But that's the thing. That's why they probably lack in the aromatic or in the variety character. And I don't know. It's just I don't feel a future for the varieties. So I'm the same like Adriana. Yeah.
Probably we are too romantic still. And for this we.
So just and then I'm going to give you guys. But you know we are all hybrids. Just you, me, strawberry. Like the hybrid is crossing two species. Okay. So far all the grape variety we know the Vitis vinifera have been crossed inside. The Vitis vinifera, okay? Cabernet Sauvignon is Cabernet Franc / Sauvignon Blanc, inside the Vitis vinifera. But Vitis is very able to cross between species, so we can cross, not all of them, but a lot of them, we can cross a Vitis labrusca with a Vitis vinifera. And it has been done spontaneously. The Catoba and the Delaware, I know that very well because I work with these guys, there have been spontaneous cross happening in America. So a hybrid is a dirty word for some people, but it's also the reality of most of the living species, just to be clear. The fact is just with what's happening right now, we are pushing it in a lab in a way that is really faster with very specific will about the variety we want to obtain. And so what can be done in nature spontaneously, what us as human can we do in a lab as the same kind of, you know, holistic quality, I would say. So I believe hybrids is I believe it's real. It's like we are hybrid. But what we are pushing from lab and maybe what's happening in a different way is a whole different story. I believe there is a future for that because it's true in France there is a study. Hybrids, they allow 80% less use of treatment for oidium and mildew. So it's not nothing. When we are talking about, it's not nothing, it's something we need to consider. What about the result in a glass? That's a whole different story. But in terms of preserving and not having to use products for everything, there are definitely some things you can't just cross out. Something needs to be observed, but we need to have the result in a glass and what's done. That's a whole different thing. And can we be God instead of nature? That's all.
I try also PV, but only one row to see how it is to handle also in the vineyard work. So, but at the moment it's so difficult because all the PV planting is quite too young. So for the idea of a nice great wine is when the root system is still finished. So it takes over 10 years. And that's the big thing. So yep. After changing, so we try only now really young wines from young vineyards, and that's also difficult to see how is the taste in the future and what brings the wine to make them, brings them also more deepness inside. So for me, it's also, I come from a real quite dry region, so we don't have to think about this alternative way of replanting our vineyards because it's quite dry and we almost can handle
some
it
pressure.
Easy, yeah. We have not the pressure of the fungus and that.
Yeah, so we are going to go to, so I think Pee-wee's open question, keep your mind open. I think we're going to see a lot of different things happening. The age of the root system going to change a lot also with people working very, very seriously. I think we're going to be able to talk a bit more about that. Now, because we are seeing 10 years old, 15 years old, 20 years old vineyard coming into production and we can test them. You don't test Bronner or Souvenir Gris very often, you know. It's also we don't know how to test them. So we to be humble about our judgment on that. And at the end, you need farming. You need a good farming, you need clonal diversity, and you need biodiversity, and we go back to the same thing. So one of the problems with peewees, you have only one clone right now, so and they still need to be grafted. So, you know, a lot of questions. Let's just refresh ourselves with Petnat, and then last flight, and then you have 7 minutes, but you have 10 minutes to talk. So yeah, we just wanted to feel like Petnat again, Panobile, like Saint Laurent, and I think it's absolutely delicious Petnat.
Yeah, Saint Laurent is for me actually a big thing in our region. It's really authentic variety. It's you really can compare it with Pinot Noir. It's really elegant, fresh styled, herbal, and I think also you can do a lot of products out of Saint Laurent, like. Andreas did it. He's 3 towns away from me. I think he did a great job. It's actually a really hot region where we are. And if a wine tastes like that, really refreshing, really, really nice, really cool, then...
Yeah, because it feels like a nice ripe acidity. It doesn't feel like you said that the solution is not to pick earlier. That's not the solution because you don't get what you guys want, which is the aromatic compound and everything is going to make a wine last and also taste complex. And here you can still feel it's probably not picked late November, but you can feel there is enough aromatics that you can pinpoint the grape if you know it a little bit.
And I think what I really like on Saint Laurent, I think it's, for me, cold climate variety. You know, if you have really hot vintage, Saint Laurent stays every time at 12 alcohol. And it's still fresh. It's every time fresh. And also, if you have a really cool vintage, Saint Laurent will be the first vintage, the first grape variety which is ripe. And I think it's a big advantage to do it. But it's like Pinot Noir. It's really hard to grow. You have tight bunches. You need the right places. And those guys in Lower Austria, they know it because they have more. Fattier soil or more moisture, more clay soil, you can say it like that. And I think it's hard. St. Laurent, you have to grow. My father is also a farmer, and he's always saying we have to put St. Laurent where the cereals just go 10 centimeters, where nothing is growing. There you have to put St. Laurent. And then
otherwise you get like cluster is too tight, you get too much like rot or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like it's not loose enough. And you can't get...
And with right farming, so organic farming and the right soil, St. Laurent is possible. But you don't find so much St. Laurent because it's so much...
But it's so nice. I would say it's one of the grapes from the red wine from Austria, I know the less, because St. Laurent, I tasted 10 years ago, they were either just like very varietal and kind of bland. You didn't really know where you were going or they were too oaked. And the delicacy was not there. And it's a grape I've been rediscovering over the last 3-4 years, but things are coming. And just in terms of its expressivity, and I understood the difficulty of farming, and you were like, okay, now I get why
I'm a difficult guy, so I produce St. Laurent.
So we're going to taste a Svalgal from you. So yeah... And I have to say, my awakening with Saint Laurent was also with sparkling and Petnat, and then I went back to the red. But as an alternative to Pinot Noir, you know, I was always going for Blaufränkisch, kind of, because this was probably the grape that was mastered in a way or was shown in international scene and shipped to us, where you could see like, wow, that's a really good alternative for us as sommelier to play with Blaufränkisch. But now Blaufränkisch for me is a bit more structured than Pinot Noir, especially if I'm thinking about Septentrional Pinot Noir from my country. But Saint Laurent is just where I'm looking for in terms of tannin extraction, aromatic delicacy, florality, and all that. Well, Blaufränkisch is a tiny bit more buffed up and going kind of one step higher. So I'm very glad to see more and more Saint Laurent coming out now. And so it's what we're going to taste. So we're going to taste... the last wine, we're going to go quite quickly with the Saint Laurent from the Chardos. We're going to go again with like the local guy from Van Wiertel. And then we're going to taste your wine, Andreas, and finish with Thomas. And thanks for, I hope we're almost there. So do you want to talk where they are?
Of Matthias and his family. He's also... in the Weinviertel district, but he's really close to the...
Are they close to Johannes?
He's quite close to Johannes. I think it's a half hour ride by car. But he's really close to Slovakia border. And it's also a quite dry region because it's the landscape is more flat. So it's the big difference for me. So because there are a lot of windmills to produce energy in this district. So the landscape is, because it's real flat and quite dry. So they make also the Burgundian varieties at this place, and now they also changed to biodynamic farming the last years, and yeah.
So as a specialist of Saint Laurent Ragonnetaise wine, I think this is a great introduction to the grape. It's a bit on the juicier side, and we are going to taste it because I think you pick up that ripeness in the grape, and I really like the way that the winemaking didn't try to hide it too much. Like they really went for that juicier style without trying to make it too aged or to go with any kind of hard oak treatment of that kind of burst. And I think that's, for me, a very good introduction to the grape to people that don't know it in a more friendly, easygoing way.
Excuse
it's like
me.
Two brothers and one sister, right? Yeah.
I have a question because I really don't have any idea of St. Laurent. We never had it in our region. Why is St. Laurent definitely more powerful in color than Pinot, although they are like brothers or sisters?
I think St. Laurent often... a lot of wineries do St. Laurent often more conventional way, so it fucks the variety a lot. It changed the variety a lot. I think St. Laurent, you should be really gentle, really like you. It's always complicated in the vineyard, in the cellar, and I think that's the reason why it's you find it mostly on conventional way, and so then it tastes not like St. Laurent.
Okay. Yeah, just because of the color. Why is it so deep?
I think it's a bit darker than Pinot Noir, but actually that case of St. Laurent is or that wine is a bit darker than normal, I would say. Okay.
Yeah, like just in terms of tech for this wine, it's 80% distem and 20% whole cluster, and it's very short maceration. It's only 14 days on the skin. Okay, so it's not a lot of extraction. There is no pigeage whatsoever. So there is a little bit of color indeed to the grape. But once again, guys, color doesn't mean tannin. It's a complex family. We're not going to go into the phenol story, but I never thought Saint Laurent to be very tannic. I always thought more color, but not very tannic. So just, we don't drink with our eyes, and don't forget that. And I think here we can feel that, especially there is a bit of CO2 dissolved here, okay? Especially when we open the wine, you definitely feel the pritz. And CO2 is an acid, it's carbonic acid and all that, but it should enhance the tannin, and it's not the case at all. You feel how the tannin are just soft and ripe and gentle and have this kind of almost a sweet feeling in the back. Salivation is close to nowhere. You don't salivate the same way with tannin that we salivate with acid. The salivation with tannin is way more thicker. When you pay attention to your saliva, it's a very good interpretation of the wine. If you have a lot of tannin in your wine, your saliva is going to be very thick. When you spit, it's going to be white in your spit tune. If you have a lot of acid in your wine, your saliva is going to be way more rich in water. So water versus protein-based saliva. And here, if you spit, you won't have a lot of that white stuff. You're going to have more like a translucent spitting because there is more acid. Okay, that's something we don't really learn about when we talk about wine. We need to continue to expand that. And this is central, like for me here, it's more like acid-driven, very gentle, soft tannin, I don't need to kind of, my mouth doesn't need to create a new buffer to protect myself from tannin. And I just keep with that very nice watery salivation that is driven by the acid structure. Okay? So once again, another thing we need to start to think about when you taste wine. I think that's super cool. And with a little bit of spritz, you don't feel the tannin. It's just like give a little bit of burst. It just like bangs out. People like Gamay, you get them and they're like, wow, that's cool. And that's even better. Not really, but here we are. So let's talk about your wine.
Right, yeah. We are actually I'm sitting in the corner and I'm also in the corner of Austria, so really I'm the Hungarian. So really close to Hungarian and Slovakian border, and there is a big lake they didn't told yet. There is a lake called Neusiedlersee, and I'm in the eastern part of the lake. For me, our region, I would describe it, I said it before, it's like the Africa of Austria. It was back in the days, it was a sea, and the leftovers of the sea, there are small spots of water, and also the soils, they are dominated by this salty character, I would say. And yeah, we try to bring in a really hot region, a warm region. We're gonna try to make fresh styled wines, and yeah, with Austrian with authentic Austrian varieties. And in red, we are on Zweigeln and St. Laurent. Here we have a wine which is a single vineyard wine. It's called Hutweide. That means back in the days, all the farmers they had cows by their own, they had pigs, they had wine, they had everything. And there was the area which is close to the village, and there was, back in the days, there was cows there, yeah. And that's Hutweide. Weide means like, I don't know, I cannot translate. Any one of you? Yeah, something like that, yeah. Greenland, yeah. And yeah, it's quite a rich soil there. It's completely the opposite where we grow St. Laurent. It's rich soil, black earth. But what is really cool on that soil is in the underground we have iron, and that gives the wines the domestic freshness. And actually no one told already this is quality wine, so it made it's a bit complicated to explain, but you have to put your wines to a commission and they taste it and say if it's right or not, and it's got really complicated, you know. I really want to make terroir wine and I want to write my single vineyard on the label, but it's really hard, so I have to try it for my style of wines. I have to try it 3 or 4 times sometimes.
Because you know, you have the system, you have the DAC, have the DAC, you have a specific grape variety for the DAC, the DAC, and then there you have a pyramidal system now from village to single vineyard that needs to follow that. So it's the problem of legislation on one side too.
But for me, it's so important that I write this vineyard on it, because you should feel the vineyard. It's completely the region. You should feel it, and you should feel. Hutweide, yes. And you should feel
there is an identity, there is a reason why that Valgalt on that Hutweide vineyard expressed like that.
And for me, it's also, I would say, a style, for me, a cool climate style, which represents really good Austria. It's really limited, so we have really small yields. We harvest generally everything with hand. And with small boxes, we put the boxes, the 50 kilogram boxes, in 500 liter barrels, in open barrels. Then we make Maceration Carbonique for, I don't know, 10 to 14 days. My father is getting a bit nervous if it's smelling after lactic. He's saying, we do vinegar. And I said, it's okay. No, we need it. We have to do it like that. That's the good way. And then after that period, I go in with my feet and we take everything with us, so whole stems, as 100% stems in it. It's for me, it's important that you have everything what you have outside in the wine. And yeah.
What do you think about the stem? Yeah.
Yeah, and so you should feel it.
I think one of the big evolution for red wine for Austria for me is especially the oak management that used to be very prominent 10 or 15 years ago, and you could feel that the juice was fantastic and there was really a lot of quality in the red wine, like the red grape variety, but the vinification was a bit too much, too extracted, too much punch down, too much oak treatment, and you were missing it. And I think what you can see today is a kind of a transparency of all the wine we've been tasting without losing the complexity.
Yeah, and Stefan already told you, you know those wines are they're really hard to sell in Austria, you know. It's like you want to do really natural, you want to do it not influenced, and it's hard because
you don't have the crowd for that. It's not the palate is not there.
Yeah, yeah.
But we are here, so
I am not so agree. Eh? It's like in Austria and Vienna is a very big natural movement, and it is the country is very developed. So I am not so agree.
maybe not in Salzburg
or so.
But it's just 5 to 10%.
Vienna is like half of the population, no, from Austria. So
yeah, it's changing. We are first in America and we need wine. So, but and let's just finish because guys, we have some wine to taste and we don't to hold you more. And if you have one or two questions, same thing. The wine from Thomas, which is also in your area, guys, if I'm not mistaken. So Svalgard and Saint Laurent blend. If you want just to maybe, in terms of the expression and what he's doing with this wine.
He's a great winemaker. He's one of the first ones who, he's young, no? Maybe he's 45 years old, but he's working since many, many years, organical and natural.
Since the mid-90s,
Since the beginning, no? So I remember when I was arriving to Austria, like 12 years ago, he was already doing what he's doing now. And I think this is also a very important quality. You know that he is what he is. He does not try to make nothing. He's good. He's making very good. And he's in the area of in Binden. Actually, it's called, it's a small town. It's close to Neusiedl too. Also influenced by the Neusiedlers. And there they are having more, so how would say shota of the English
gravel.
So more gravel soils, and yeah.
I think here we are going to finish with this wine, guys. It's 11.5% alcohol. It's complete. You know, we are all striving because our guests are asking for this kind of lighter profile of red wine that are highly drinkable. But we don't want to just give them something glue that just once again have this carbonic aspect. Here you have like 11.5% alcohol. It's complete. You have enough weight. The tannins are still here. They are very discreet, but they are still here. There is a complexity in terms of the aromatic profile because you pick up a bunch of stuff. You pick up some fruit, there is a variety, there is some vegetal characteristics that are very interesting, especially for pairing when you have a food that is heavy in vegetable and certain type of lactic ferment and all this kind of thing. And it's possible. And there is a lot of things like that for me happening in Austria in terms of red wine, when you can have 11.5 up to 13% wine with elegance, depth, layers, but still very approachable if you don't know anything about wine. Because if you pour that to somebody, it's super highly satisfying. You know, there is everything that a newbie would like. It's just juicy and given. But if you like wine, there is enough depth and enough layers to satisfy you. And in terms of pairing, as a pro, I can see a bunch of things I can do. You can do that by the glass and you can do that. So I think that's something I think is very exciting about that in terms of the range. The whites are structured without losing their acidity, and the red are getting more and more subtle and nuanced and really giving a bunch of layers without losing their identity. And giving a bunch of really potential in terms of alcohol profile. So I hope you enjoy the wine we tasted today. I think it's really just a glimpse about what's happening in your country, because it's really very stimulating. The quality is extraordinarily high. As you can see, there is a lot of also demand on themselves to put in a market wines that are not flooded, because I'm sorry, too much VA, too much mouse, too much breads. I can't pour that by the glass. I do one glass and then I can't do it anymore. And I want to have wines that express the place, the work, and the grape. You know, I want everything with low sulfur, if no sulfur. And I have to say what the lineup is today. It's like really, it's very, very high, and it's very, very highly stimulating. So bravo, guys, for what you are doing. It's very cool.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.